tremendous chus, a merit and opportunity for us to have Reb Nosson Maimon, who's one of the great promulgators of Breslov Torah to the English-speaking community. Since 1987, he's headed the Breslov Yeshiva Meir Sharm's English-speaking programs, teaching and counseling worldwide. It's something really amazing. There are over 5,000 shiurim that are streamed from his website. That's quite a lot, 5,000. BreslovTorah.com, with translation and explanation of all major Breslov works. And of course, besides exposure to this special individual, it's great, especially for Rosh Hashanah, to get a little Tom Breslov, the depth of Breslov, the joyfulness of Breslov, the Simchas HaChaim that I always see when I run into Breslovers, try to get a little bit of Tom from everybody. I remember the good days when my Rebbe Reb Lachman used to share, amongst all the other things he shared also, Breslov Torahs, which stayed with me. Just one more thing that caught my eye in the bio, which I think is very relevant, is that the Rav studied closely with the leading Breslov elders of previous generations. So, you know, there's so much out there in all things, and it's always important to know where people come from, where their traditions are, where their Mesorah is, because we're all links in a chain. So it's very chashuv that we have some part of that chain, and not just the Breslov of today, the Breslov of yesterday. And with no further ado, welcome Reb Maimon. Thank you.
Shalom Aleichem. The world has changed dramatically from when I was growing up. There was no such thing as chapels 68 years ago. And just watching the change taking place in Klal Yisrael, Kanai Nahara, I remember one of my rebbes, Reb Michal Dorfman Zechonavro, once said that years ago, again, 50, 70 years ago, if someone would want to open up a yeshiva for Balei Tshuva, there was a lot of pushback from a lot of different directions. There were many parents, certainly American parents, who at that time, people who had come to the United States from different countries before the World Wars, after the World Wars, and became very Americanized, which meant in many cases people leaving their Yiddishkeit behind. Stories about people dropping their tefillin into the ocean at Ellis Island, you know, before people were told that in the United States you have to earn a living. This religious stuff, you know, forget about it for now. And about 30, 40 years ago, my Rebbe said like a Ruach Tara came down to the world and the Baal Tshuva movement took off, Kanai Nahara. And at that time he was saying a person puts up a sign, yeshiva, and right away it's full, Kanai Nahara. People are coming, people are thirsty, they want to hear. And the opposition has died down quite a bit among parents and relatives, in terms of if a young man or a young woman expresses a curiosity, they want to know about their Yiddishkeit, it's not looked upon as terrible as it was in the beginning in those days. And my close friend Yossi Lanton has told me and tells me a lot about what goes on here. Kanai Nahara, it's incredible. Hashem should help that the Hatzlacha should continue of the yeshiva here and all such yeshivas. We're in a season now, started Rosh Chodesh Elul and continuing through Yom Kippur for starters, 40 days, which the Torah calls Yemei Ratzon. The term Ratzon means goodwill, days when Hashem is especially feeling goodwill towards us. And the Torah tells us that this goes back thousands of years ago, when the Jews fell out of Hashem's goodwill after witnessing all the miracles in Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf, and then Matan Torah, the incredible love that Hashem showed for us in giving us his Torah and the miracles that took place over there at Har Sinai. And then we fell, we got involved and we left Hashem. We got involved in a golden calf. There's a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Libavtani Bi'achas Me'enayich. Hashem says, you loved me with one eye. We were standing under the chuppah at Har Sinai, a wedding between Hashem and the Jewish people. The ksuba, the marriage contract, was the Torah, and one eye on the Torah and one eye already planning our getaway, our escape. That's the way the Torah presents it. And Hashem was obviously a husband whose wife has one eye on him at the chuppah and one eye looking for a way out, obviously extremely upset, very angry. And Hashem said then, as he said on certain other rare occasions, he says to Moshe Rabbeinu, get out of the way, I want to destroy them. We'll destroy them and we'll start over. And Moshe Rabbeinu, being the loyal servant Hashem that he is and the loyal leader of Klal Yisrael, won't let it happen. And he goes to bat for the Jewish people, 40 days of intense tefillah, starting from Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. Shiva Asar B'Tammuz is when he broke the luchos, he came down, witnessed the Egel Azov, goes up to heaven for 40 days, comes back down with no positive response from Hashem. Goes back up for another round, another 40 days, which finishes on Yom Kippur, and that's when Hashem says, Solachti kidvorecha. I forgive the Jews based on your words, based on your tefillah, your words. And the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Gemara saying that because of this, because Moshe Rabbeinu achieved this incredible success from Rosh Chodesh Elul till Yom Kippur, of being able to turn things around completely, to take Hashem from a point of being very angry at us, seemingly wanting to do away with us, and Hashem saying, Solachti kidvorecha, these 40 days were declared Yemei Ratzon, days of goodwill, an opportunity for any person who feels that for whatever reason they're not in Hashem's good graces, or they fell out of Hashem's good graces and want to come back in, this is the opportunity. These are called Yemei Ratzon, from Rosh Chodesh Elul through Yom Kippur. So here we're talking about a time, an Ace Ratzon. And we know there is such a thing in Yiddishkeit. It's mentioned in many places on Shabbos, when we make Kiddush Friday night, in Shmon Esrei, we say, Bi Ahava Uvaratzon Hinchilonu. Be ahava v'ratzon hinchaltonu. That Shabbos is one of those special times when Hashem's love and goodwill towards us, and also our yearning for Hashem, our desire for Hashem, is at a special high place. On Shabbos at Mincha, it takes a leap, a giant leap. That's the one day a week, one time in the entire week, that we say, Va'ani sfilasi l'cha Hashem eis ratzon, that I'm presenting my tefillah to you, Hashem, at this incredible, opportune time. Because Shabbos itself is called Tchila l'mikrei Kodesh, we say Friday night. It's the top, the highest one of all the Jewish holidays. With all due respect to Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, very, very important days, but in some respects, Shabbos is higher. The penalty for Shabbos is skila, for desecrating Shabbos is skila. It's only Shabbos. All other holidays, the penalty is less because the kedusha of Shabbos is so high. What makes it so high and special? This ahava and ratzon, this love and goodwill that Hashem feels towards us and that we could feel towards Hashem. Now this term ratzon has, like many other words in Lashon Kodesh, has multiple definitions and interpretations. We said Ratzon means goodwill, and Ratzon also means a Jewish soul. The soul, the nefesh of a Jew, is called Ratzon. Where do we see this? Rashi says in Chumash that when Avram Avinu is negotiating with Ephron to purchase the Maaret HaMachpelah, and he says to Ephron, and to the Bnei Ches, Im yesh es nafshechem, Likbor es Mesi, if you are willing to allow me to bury my wife here, then please sell me this real estate. And Rashi says on the word Nafshechem, Ritzonchem, your Ratzon. And this is an incredible, enlightening point, because you ask most people, how would you define a neshama? How would you define a soul? Could you tell me? Put it into some kind of words that I can relate to. And it's pretty difficult. But here we have a Rashi that gives us a very clear definition of the nefesh, of the soul, that the nefesh is the ratzon, the will and desire of a person, which is incredibly powerful. We know there's a famous statement in the Gemara, Ein dovor omei bifnei haratzon. There is nothing in existence as powerful as willpower. When a Jew turns on their willpower, I want something, I really want something. When a person really wants something, it happens. It's incredible. Just to give a tiny example that comes to mind, one of my close friends, who's originally from the United States, moved here to Israel years ago, the home is an English-speaking home, only, pretty much. They moved to Israel, so they use a little bit of Hebrew words, sprinkling of Hebrew, but 90% one of their children decided he wants to go to a Yiddish-speaking school. And when I heard about it, I thought the odds of this is a real only Yiddish-speaking school. And I thought the odds of this, it's like ridiculous. It's totally, totally impossible. Well, he's in his second year in that school and doing great, doing very well. And we're talking about a young boy, 15, 16, 17 years old, who made up his mind he wants to do something, and that was it. There was no way, worked on it, not for 10 years, 50 years, maybe months, several months, listening to it, concentrating, doing whatever it took. Just using this as an example. This term, Ratzon, being the nefesh, the essence of a person. There's a famous Rambam where people are familiar with this, that there are certain, lo aleinu, there are certain situations in marriage where people have a terrible falling out, and the Beis Din decides that it's the right thing for this couple to get divorced, that they must get divorced. And the husband says, no thanks, not interested. And they try to convince him, and he won't allow himself to be convinced. And the Gemara says, we know that in order for a person to give a divorce, in order for it to be real, it has to be done willingly. Willingly. He has to want this. Beratzon, with goodwill. What if he says, I don't want? So the Gemara says that there are certain times where we beat him up until he says, Koifen, I say, we force him until he says, Roitzani. So the famous Rambam who says, that's ridiculous. Come on. He says, is that called Roitzani? Could you say that he won, that he really wants? The only reason he's doing it because you beat him up. And the Rambam says, let me tell you a secret. Let me tell you a secret. Each and every one of us has a nefesh, a Jewish soul. That Jewish soul is a chelek elokam imal. It's part of Hashem himself. That soul wants to do the right thing, period. So then how could it be that we're doing so many wrong things? How could it be that we're making so many mistakes? You know, we're the wrong thinking, the wrong kind of thoughts, and saying the wrong things, and doing, how is it possible? The answer is because we have opposition. We have a Yetzer Hara, we have tests. The whole purpose behind Hashem creating the world was for the sake of man, because man is the only individual in the entire creation that has free choice, that has the ability to want good or want bad, to want to do the right thing or want to do the wrong thing. And therefore, the Rambam says, each and every one of us, deep down inside, we really want to do the right thing. But sometimes our Yetzer Hara, our evil inclination, gets in the way and turns us. And sometimes the only way to get that out of us, in the case of this particular person, was beating him up till he says, Rotzani, and you're seeing what he really, really wants, what the real person wants, in a sense. That's the real person. When you saw, and this is an incredible message for us regarding the process of tshuva, regarding life in this world. People very often are trying to think, what do I want? What do I really want? You ask a person, what do you want? And people will come up with all kinds of different answers. What I want. I want to be a success. I want wealth. I want people to like me. I want all kinds of different things. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Batel Ritzoncha Mepnei Ritzono. That our mission in this world, our mission in life, is to investigate, to find out, what does Hashem want? What does Hashem want? And then to change, to take my nefesh, my ratzon, and train it, that despite all the things, I want that second ice cream, I want that third, I want to stay in bed, I don't want to go to shul, I want to sleep now, I want to sleep a little longer, that kind of thing. That despite the different thoughts that I have of what I want, I want to do what Hashem wants. I want to fulfill the will of Hashem. Ritzoni, the Gemara says, in fact, one of the rabbis in the Gemara said, Ritzoni lasos ritzonecha. What I really want is to do your will, but so'er shebe'isamake. But he said, I have this opponent, I have this angel who's working against me 24/7 to try to push back. and to try to convince me that's not what I really want. I really want to stay in bed. I really want that third ice cream, you know, et cetera, et cetera. All of these things that really aren't that good for me. So here there's a point of each and every person trying to figure out who is the real me, which is the real me and which is not the real me. So that when we talk about the process of tshuva, when we talk about a person returning to their roots, when we talk about a person getting back on track or getting onto a good track, when a person realizes that they're not on the best track, that kind of thing, we're talking about a person realizing, again, what's the real me? What do I really want? And if a person says, again, a person, an adult, a person who's very mature, we know as people get older, most people, healthy people, normal people, as they get older, they realize that some of the things that they wanted as a child, they've outgrown that, they've matured, and they realize that there's more important things than that. There's more important things than another toy. You take a person who's 20 years old and you buy him a set of toy cars, you know, little cars, a BMW, let's say, that's, you know, 1 inch to 1 inch wide and long, this, that, and you say, I bought you something that I'm sure you'll appreciate. I heard that you love cars, and I buy him a set of those cars. It's going to be very insulting, right? Because of course I love cars, but I've outgrown that. I'm into bigger cars. I'm into different size cars and different make cars. Those cars cost $3 a piece. I want the one that costs $300,000, you know, etc. And again, different levels of maturity, different levels of growing, to know what should I want? What should I really want? And again, using this as an example, you could imagine that there are people who are 20, 30 years old. I remember driving in Florida and in Los Angeles and seeing a man who looks like he's 75 years old and he's driving a bright red sports car, I don't know what, or a Bentley or something bright red, and he's riding like he's on top of the world. Mamash, he made it. He has achieved the ultimate success in life to be driving this car that cost half a million, whatever it is, just like that, and again, he can dress any way he wants. He doesn't care about what anybody thinks of that kind of thing. But a person with a little bit more seichel, a little bit more intellect, that's success? Is that success? Is that having made it? Is that called having made it in life? And again, one of my friends, a close friend, told me a while ago, a friend who's a member of the Syrian community in Deal, New Jersey, he told me he was once driving through a cemetery in Staten Island, a Jewish cemetery, to go to his parents' grave. There's a custom people go sometimes during the month of Elul, before Rosh Hashanah, to be mispalel at graves of parents, that kind of thing. He was driving slowly, and he's driving through the cemetery, and he sees a stone with a name on it. And he stops the car immediately and he's looking and he can't believe it. This was one of the wealthiest people in the community. A person who owned maybe 30, 40 buildings in Manhattan. Talk about what we're talking about in terms of wealth. And he says, I don't want to mention the person. He says, this is him? This is him? This stone that's, you know, 2 feet by four? This is the buildings and everything? This is where? It's this level of maturity, a realization of a mission in life, a purpose in life, and giving a little bit of thought to looking around the world around us. A person who wants to open their eyes and be honest a little bit has to come to a conclusion that this world didn't come into being by two stones knocking into each other billions of years ago with dinosaurs and all of those things. That there's something more behind how this world came into existence and how everything in the world is existing and advancing. There's got to be some higher purpose to it. And here, if a person were asked, could you summarize the whole Yiddishkeit in one word? There are people who would say Torah. But Torah isn't really one word. Torah is millions of pages. Could you do better than that? Make it a little more clear, make it easier for me a little bit, shorter. Could we shrink the Torah to its most basic elements? And the answer is yes. There's a Gemara in Makkos where the Gemara says that there were different tzaddikim who tried to shrink the Torah to its more basic elements. And one got it down to 11 points. There's a chapter in Tehillim, chapter 15 in Tehillim. Hashem, mi yogur ba'ohalecho, who will be worthy of Gan Eden? And it lists 11 points there. Then another rabbi got it down to 6. And then the Gemara says, Bo Chavaku Kanovi Ve'emidon Alachas. Chavaku Kanovi came along and he shrank the Torah to one point. That if I were asked, what's the most basic element in Judaism in Torah? Emunah, the word Emunah. He quoted the pasuk V'tzadik be'emunaso yichya. A tzadik lives with Emunah. Now, how do we define Emunah? Emunah in what? And how do we define Emunah? Here, we know that the Torah begins with the words Bereishis bara Elokim es hashamayim v'esoretz. In the beginning, Hashem created heaven and earth. In the beginning. So this is step one. The most basic point in Emunah is that there's a Hashem. He created the world from complete nothingness. Yesh me'ayin. Something from nothing. Complete nothingness. Can anyone explain that to me? Can anyone clarify that to me? How that could work? How that's possible? To the best of my knowledge, no one, no mathematician, no scientist, no mekubal, can explain how that happens. That's something that we cannot understand. It's beyond our comprehension. And Hashem wants it that way. Hashem wants certain things in life, certain things in Judaism, for us to know that right now the human mind is limited. Right now, we're not playing with a full deck, as they say. We're told there's going to come a time in the future, Kimolo ha'oretz deo es Hashem. There's going to come a time in the future when our eyes are going to be opened, we're going to be given a completely different level of knowledge, understanding, and then some of these questions which today we cannot understand, then we'll be able to understand those things. And this is why one of the dangers, people, again, there are people that like chocolate, there are people that like cars, there are people that like philosophical questions, philosophical discussions. And just like chocolate and those things, a little bit can be healthy, and too much or the wrong kind can be extremely unhealthy. A person delving into certain types of philosophical questions, which the Torah says, the Gemara warns, that we're required to stay within certain boundaries in order for a person to have a healthy understanding of Torah, of Hashem, of life, required to stay within certain boundaries, and certain questions that we might have now are outside of those boundaries. We need to know that we don't know, that certain questions cannot be answered right now. If a person, this is what the term Emunah refers to. Emunah means in that which I don't understand. If I understand something, it's not Emunah, it's Chachma, I know it. Emunah means in that which I don't see, I cannot see, and I cannot understand completely, and yet I have the ability to accept it. And Hashem promises us, the Torah tells us, Ve'erastichli be'emunah v'yodat es Hashem, that there's a two-step procedure in Yiddishkeit, that a person has to, and it really applies to everything. You get a child in school, starting a new grade, going into seventh grade. They just finished sixth grade, and the kid feels like he knows everything. We know there are children who, when they finish first grade, they think they know everything already. Nobody can teach them, nobody can tell them anything new. Then they go into second grade, and they have new books, and a new machberet, a new notebook scratch, and the kid's thinking like, you know, what are they gonna teach? What are they gonna tell me now? I learned everything, I covered everything. And if the person doesn't go into that class with a willingness to accept what the teacher says, but rather the teacher makes a statement, I have a question. There are people that do that, their nature. They'll be quiet, listen. First you have to listen to a certain, listen and be willing to accept that this teacher who's 20 or 30 or 40 years older than you and more experienced, it's very possible that they know things that you don't know yet. As smart as you think you are and as much as you think you know everything, to be willing to listen carefully and absorb, and obviously listen carefully to see, is what they're saying making sense or not? Can it be true, or does it sound like something totally false? We know that this world, the Torah calls it Olam HaSheker. I mentioned many times, and speaking different communities, that I'm walking in the Ir Atika, or I'm walking in Me'asharim, and there's a sign there, Rechov Me'asharim, but on bottom it says Sheker. all over and others. We are surrounded. Olam HaSheker means the entire world. The entire world, this world is an Olam HaSheker. It's a topsy-turvy world. This is an introduction that we're given to understand life. You're coming into a place where you're going to see things. People say seeing is believing. Seeing is believing. It's the exact opposite. What you see, the Torah tells us very often, what you see is going to be the exact opposite of truth. You see headlines, you see the people who are making headlines, and that you would think that these are the most important people in the world. They're the least important in many cases. And you see people who aren't necessarily making those big headlines. They're not called stars or superstars, and they could be the more important or the most important people in this world. But again, this requires, it's a three-step procedure, actually, because we say between Krish, emes ve'emuna chok v'lo yavor. Because if we say we're going to start with emuna, if we say that step one is faith, to believe, you believe in Hashem and I believe in a tree, and you say it's emuna is something that I can't see and I can't understand fully, what's to say that your emuna is any more valid than mine? So then where do you begin? The answer is you begin, it has to start with emes. It has to start with a certain level of honesty. And again, the Torah defines Hashem, that Hashem Elokeichem emes. Hashem is emes. The Torah is called the book of truth, emes, Torah's emes. The Torah is, now in the Torah we're told, the Gemara says about the Torah, that the Torah can be some chayim and some of us. The Torah can be interpreted correctly or incorrectly, chas v'shom. The pasuk says, "Vezos haTorah asher som Moshe lefnei b'nei Yisrael." This is the Torah which Moshe Rabbeinu placed before the Jews. It doesn't say he placed it. The Gemara says, "Some means poison, and some means medicine." The Torah can be an elixir, it can be a medicine, it can help a person improve every single aspect of their life. And the Torah can be something that people use to develop a shrewdness to trick people, to use it against people, to put other people down, to do the opposite of what Hashem really wants. So here we're told that, again, a person has to try within this Olam HaSheker. I'm in a place that I'm told is wall-to-wall Shem. I have to try to search for emes, to seek emes, and to be honest, to be honest with myself. It begins with the person, because the Gemara warns us that it's very easy for most people to see what's wrong with everybody else, to see fault in everybody else. What's most difficult is to see my own faults, that kind of thing. But here we're talking about a level of honesty, a person being able to spend a little time with themselves, being honest. All the Sfarim speak about cheshbon ha-nefesh. We know people run companies. Sometimes a person is running a company and they're selling merchandise and they think they're doing great. And then they call on the accountant at the end of the year to do that. And the accountant says that this year you've lost $3 million. The company has lost. He says, you're nuts. Got to get a different accountant. Because I can show you sales. I'll show you sales and say, you're right. You did all of these sales, but you didn't realize your expenses and you didn't realize some mistakes, did all kinds of different things. So this concept of a cheshbon ha-nefesh, a person allowing themselves time to think over, what did I do today? What did I do today? Or what do I want to do today? What am I trying to accomplish? And why? Why? Is there a real reason why I should be doing what I'm doing? Or could I do better? Or are there things that I'm doing and I'm doing them as not? And maybe it's time for a change. Maybe it's time that I stop doing certain things because it's hurting other people or I'm hurting myself, chas v'shem. And in this world, there's tremendous potential for that. So we're talking about starting with a level of emes, and the Torah promises that emes ve'emuna chok v'lo yavor, that these two go together. If a person has a level of emes, truth, that will help them choose correctly what to believe in and what not to believe. And the Gemara says this, the concept of nikaron divrei emes, that a person who is honest, who is really honest with themselves and honest in general, they'll be able to tell when somebody's pulling their leg, when somebody's fooling them or not fooling them. They'll be able to tell whether something is really true or not. And then the Torah says that this combination of emes and emuna leads to ve'erastichli be'emuna v'yodates Hashem. That once a person has those two, they'll get to understand Hashem. They'll get to learn a lot. Our Torah is vast, and every page of the Torah, if you're learning it correctly, will open your eyes. It'll enlighten you to get to understand more about what Hashem is all about, what we are all about, what life is all about. And here there's an incredible obstacle that most people deal with, that a person says, doesn't sound that difficult. What's so hard? And the answer is that there's a concept of people developing habits, number one, and a person getting old. There's a pasuk in Koheles where it defines the Yetzer Hara and it defines the Yetzer Tov. The good inclination, the bad inclination. The Yetzer Hara is called Melech Zokein Uksil, an old, foolish king. That's how the Torah describes the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Tov, the good inclination, is called Yeled Miskein V'chacham, a young child who's intelligent. This term old, people getting old, is something that holds people back in an incredible way of developing, of succeeding. That drive to succeed, the drive to learn new things. The Torah defines Yiddishkeit. We mentioned emuna. The pasuk says in Eicha, Chadoshim labekorim, Rabba emunasecha. New, brand new, every morning, lots of faith. The Torah is teaching us a secret that if a person wants to be able to develop faith in Hashem, faith in the Torah, if a person wants to succeed in Yiddishkeit, one of the most important things is this Chadoshim labekorim, brand new every morning. Person would say, like, why did Hashem create, those of us who believe Hashem created the world, He created man, why did Hashem create us in such a way that we have to go to sleep at night and get up in the morning, and what for? If Hashem wants us to learn Torah, let's say, or He wants us to accomplish, He's cutting our productive time by a third. Some people sleep 8 hours a night, 6 hours a night, 4 hours, different levels. Why did He do that? Is there any benefit in that? And the answer is, there's an incredible benefit in that. This term, hischatshus, new, brand new, which is one of the secrets of success in tshuva, in life, when the pasuk in Eicha, which speaks about tshuva, which all of us are familiar with, hashiveinu Hashem eilecha v'nashuva, Hashem, please allow me to return to you, to get back to my roots, to get back to who I really am. How? Chadesh yomeinu kikedem. Renew me, help me be new. We know that in Judaism, we define a month. It's called chodesh. Chodesh miloshen chadash. The Gemara tells us that the other nations of the world are compared to the sun. The sun is basically stagnant, meaning it doesn't get larger or smaller depending on different time. The moon is changing every single day in terms of how we see it. In the beginning of the month, it starts off tiny, tiny, and it grows throughout the month until the 15th of the month. Then it gets smaller, smaller, till it's just about to disappear. And then the molad. Molad means it's born anew. The moon is born anew. And we, the Jewish people, are compared to the moon. In what way? That we have this ability. We have this ability, and this is part of the secret of our success. The ability to go to sleep and to wake up. And wake up not the same person. A person who goes to sleep, if they have any kind of healthy sleep, when I get up, I'm not the same. We make a bracha, hamachzir neshamos livgorim mesim. The Gemara defines sleep as a 60th of death. It's death and tchiyas hamesim, getting up, new life, brand new life, new opportunity. This is what real living is all about. It's about a new beginning. Every day is an opportunity for a new beginning. Every month, we say, harachman on Rosh Chodesh, we say, Harachaman hu yechade shalenu es hachodesh hazeh leto. Hashem, please, new month, new, want to be new. And then Rosh Hashanah, Harachaman hu yechade shalenu es hashanah hazeh leto v'vracha. This is telling us something about what life is really, what real living is all about. There's, in English, you have the word to exist. A tree, a building exists. An animal exists. You have the term living, life, chayim, the term to live. That's a completely different league, a completely different level. And this concept of living requires this newness, this ability to renew, this ability to start, make a new beginning all the time. I remember I was once talking to a very successful businessman, one of these Syrians, and his name is on a number of buildings in Eretz Yisrael, yeshivas, shuls. And he said to me, I was in his home, a beautiful, beautiful home in Brooklyn, and another home in Deal, New Jersey, another home in Florida, another home in Israel. And he said to me, Rabbi, you should know that there was a time that I didn't have a token to get onto the subway. And I started a business and it failed. And I started another business and it failed. And then I went and started a third business and it was a home run. He opened up a department store in the Bronx and very successful financially, et cetera, et cetera. And this was an incredible, important lesson about life for all of us. Again, living. A person wants to live, not just to exist. A person wants to live has to be prepared that Hashem created the world, vayi erev, vayi voker, yom echod. That a cycle is night and day. That's a complete cycle. Darkness and then light. The Gemara says, Bereisha Chashucha, Vahadar Nechora. First there's darkness, then there's light. First, I don't know something. First, I'm in the dark. And then if I have a willingness to learn, if I'm willing to sit and listen and have a certain level of emuna, trust, and know where to put that trust, where do I want to put that faith? Who do I want to believe? Do I want to believe this religion or that religion? Do I want to believe Reform, Conservative, Orthodox? If a person is willing to listen, to strive for that emes and emuna, and a person comes to a realization that they made a mistake. There are many people in the past 50 years or so that I've been teaching. I've met many people who were totally unaffiliated at first, unaffiliated with Judaism. They didn't know what Yom Kippur was. They never heard of it. And then they started off in a Reform synagogue because that was where they... That was the only thing that was where they lived. And they came to a realization that this didn't seem to be that authentic. They saw contradictions, different things. Then they went from there to conservative, from there to modern orthodox, and so on and so forth. A human being is allowed to say, I made a mistake. I thought X, I grew, I matured, I got older, and now I think Y. It looked to me like this was the truth or this was the ultimate truth. I matured, I got older, and I see that there's something better. Nothing wrong with that. Rabbi Nachman once made a statement. He said that the world thinks that a tzaddik cannot make a mistake, and if he makes a mistake, he's no longer a tzaddik. And he said, I disagree with both of those things. I say even a tzaddik can make a mistake, and if he makes a mistake, the mistake is a mistake, and the tzaddik is a... We don't put an X through that person. That person's gone. That person's off the list. A person can make a mistake. A person can grow. They realize. And especially if we're talking about Torah, which is in... We're talking about Hashem, who is infinite. And we're told that the Torah and Hashem are one, which means the wisdom of the Torah is infinite. It could be that at a certain point in my life, this is how I define the truth based on my limited knowledge at that time. And then I learn a little bit more. I go through a year of learning and I'm in a different place. And there's nothing wrong. That's normal. That's healthy. That's normal. There are people that get married, and when they first get married, the husband and wife are in a certain place in religion, let's say. And then one of them, the husband or the wife, starts learning more, growing. And the other one says, 1 minute, I didn't buy into it. When I married you, you weren't like this. That's not a problem in religion. That's a problem in defining life. You mean you thought you married a stone? You thought you married something that's not going to change? It's going to remain? That's what we got married for? That's what we're in this world for? To remain this, to stay in one place? If a person's staying in one place, one of the rabbis once said, if my Kriya Shema today is the same Kriya Shema as yesterday, then I'm ready to have my head, put my head down on a guillotine for them to chop off my head. Why? Because if Hashem gave me a new day to live, He expects a new Kriya Shema. He doesn't want yesterday's Shema. He doesn't want yesterdays. And in fact, this is an incredible, interesting point. We'll close with this. The most basic declaration of faith, faith in Hashem, is Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Right? But in reality, what if we left out those first two words? What if we just said Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad? What's wrong with that? What's the Shema Yisrael? What's the announcement? Who are we making this announcement for? Reb Nosson, Rabbi Nachman's closest student, says, I'll tell you who the announcement is. The announcement is for you, for me, for each one of us. That we're getting up in the morning, we're saying Shema in the morning and the evening to remind ourselves that the Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad of the morning is not the same one as the evening. I'm in a different place. I'm moving. I'm growing. I'm trying to advance. When does a person say, everybody listen? When does a person make an announcement? When they're going to say something new. If a person says, hey, everybody listen, the sun is going to set today and we're going to have evening. A person belongs in a hospital, a mental hospital, right? Making an announcement, announcing that there's a change. When there's a change, you make an announcement. We say Shema Yisrael every day, twice a day, three times a day, to remind ourselves that there's a change. There's a change. My emunah is not staying in one place. My connection to Hashem, and I myself don't want to stay in one place, because I am a chelek elukam imal. I am a part of Hashem. I am ratzon. I have desire. And if I don't allow the desire, my desire to shut down, there's nothing in the world that I can't accomplish. The Torah promises, ein davar omed b'fnei ratzon. Hashem should help that all of us should stay young, to hold on to our youthfulness and the thirst. There's a famous Gemara, a Mishnah, a Gemara that says that a person who drinks water when they're thirsty, they make a bracha, shehakol nia bedvaro. What if you're not thirsty? What if you're not thirsty and you drink water? You're drinking it to take a pill from it. You don't make a bracha. So one of the rabbis once said, the Torah is compared to water. If a person's learning Torah with a thirst, knowing that every day is something brand new, what I know till now doesn't exist. New page, I'm opening a new page every day. That Torah has bracha to it. That Torah is blessed. If a person doesn't have that thirst, that desire, chas v'shalom, then they miss out on that bracha. Hashem should help that all of us should have the bracha and take advantage of these special days, especially these 40 days that we're in now. There's still 10 days till Rosh Hashanah. Then there's an Aseres Yemei Tshuva. And then there's a Sukkos. And then there's a Simchas Torah. The climax, the person says, like, where are we headed? Where are we really headed? Person knows Elul, we're told, is a time of great seriousness. Aseres Yemei Tshuva, even more serious. Yom Kippur, the epitome of seriousness. And then what? And then we go into Sukkos, which is called Zman Simchaseinu. And then we go to Simchas Torah Shmini Atzeres, which is the ultimate joy. Because that's what Hashem really wants. Hashem wants us to be happy, really happy. And true happiness is Torah. Pikudei Hashem Yesharim Mesamchei Lev. If a person is learning Torah properly, it's going to make you very happy, because you're going to know you're on a good, healthy path. True tefillah, v'simachtim beveis tefillasi. A person praying properly is happy, because I'm talking to the creator of the world. A friend of mine once wanted to have a photo op with the president. I think it was during the time of Ronald Reagan. He paid $15,000. It took about 3 months for the Secret Service to investigate him, to see if they're going to allow him to be in the room with the president for 5 minutes. He wasn't allowed to initiate any conversation. If the president, no asking questions. If he asks, if he tells you something, you can respond other than that. And again, it was 5 minutes or so, and the president is dead and buried. He's gone. He lost his presidency after 4 years, 8 years, and then he passed away like every human being. And we are in a position, we are able to speak to the creator of the world. Person who thinks about that for a moment in terms of the joy that that should give. And that's what Hashem really wants. He wants us to be happy, genuinely happy, and that's what we're moving towards. But there are steps that lead up to it, because healthy happiness, a healthy relationship, is a combination of yira and ahava. The Torah says, reishis chachma, yiras Hashem. Step one in the relationship with Hashem, or even a relationship with people, is respect. Respect fear, a certain fear of consequences. A person has that, it leads into an ahava. The word yira, yud resh aleph hey, the aleph hey of yira is the aleph hey of ahava. It's a natural progression. That if we start off with the respect, the elul, the aseres yimei tshuva, it will lead into a sukkah, a simchas Torah, where we express our ahava, deep love for Hashem. Wishing everybody a wonderful elul, tishrei, to close the year on a good note, and the new year should be better and better.